Hello and welcome to the Corner 3, where we are spotted up talking all things Dallas Mavericks basketball. These red stinking hot Mavs were fired up for tonight's game in Sacramento. Hopefully you are too. We're going to get you ready for this late tip-off. My name is Bobby Corella. Joining me here in Studio 41, presented by Chime, the great Austin Ivan. Austin, you work a lot of nights, whether it's on the court reporting or it's in the truck producing shows. How do you juice yourself up to stay up late for these games? Are you just, you know, pipe this caffeine into my veins, or are you a pregame napper? What's your secret?
I don't know. Yeah, I would say coffee, like a little pregame ritual of like going and getting coffee in the afternoon. I'm not a morning coffee person normally, so like I wait till the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was playing, I would say naps in the afternoon. Now I wish I could do that every day. That would be nice. Yeah. But
Did you have a pregame meal when you were playing?
Yes, a Monster.
Oh, you got super excited about this.
A Monster energy drink and a Snickers. Every game.
You just get D1 basketball success.
Before every game.
You just get high on sugar before you play?
I don't know. Like, I don't know why I got into that and how it worked one game, and then I thought that was like my ritual routine every game. Like full size Snickers, not even like a mini size. Like
you like dip the Snickers into the Monster. And
oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Wow, that took you all the way to Oklahoma State.
Yeah, it did somehow. Jeez.
See, I was 14 getting chef-crafted meals, being the third string power forward.
You should have tried this Monster and a Snickers.
I should have. Wow. Isaac Harris there at the end of the table. Isaac, you have two kids, so I'm sure napping isn't really a big part of your routine because you're being a dad. How are you going to stay up late for the game tonight?
Just try to get on to bed, you know. Just say, hey, can you please go to sleep before tip off?
But dad, it's 5 p.m.
I don't know. It's like, all right. That's kind of the goal. Get everything done before tip off and kick back. Watch this game. Watch the Mavs win a second one in Sacramento.
It is a 9 p.m. Central time tip off tonight in Sacramento. That game is going to be on WFAA and all across the Dallas Mavericks network. If you are in the state of Texas, if you're National Hay League Pass or whatever, you're just going to have to figure it out, but you won't want to miss it. It is a massive, massive game, and it becomes even bigger because on Tuesday night, the Mavs just, they crushed the Kings, 132-96. I mean, it was one of the biggest games of the season, certainly one of the biggest wins of the season, and the Mavs came correct from the jump. Luka just dominating the first half. Kyrie picked it up in the second half, and there were many other guys that stepped up all throughout the game. Austin, let's talk first about Luka. Dude was came in and was grimacing from the tip-off. He was listed as questionable, sore Achilles. Dude might not even play. And then he comes out and he scores 26 points in the first half. And then in the second half, Kyrie said, hey, buddy, you rest. I'll take it from here. And Kyrie dominated and helped the Mavs really open it up to where in the fourth quarter, Luka didn't even have to play. How big of a luxury is it for Dallas? And we'll talk about some of the other guys afterward, but how big of a luxury is it for the Mavs to have one guy that can give you 26 in the first half and then another dude can just completely take over and dominate in his own way after halftime?
You can't take it for granted, but it is so nice. And I think people do because they kind of expect it. But to have a guy like Luka who starts games hot, who gets everyone involved, like you said, the 26 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. So he's still
in a half.
In one half, yes. Not bad. In one half of basketball. And then Kyrie comes out in the third quarter, is knocking down shots. He has, multiple rebounds and assists also in the second half. So, like, his stat line was just as impressive of what he did in the third quarter. So, to have that, Kyrie talked about it, how they're picking and choosing, like, whose turn it is, when they need to go, like, when they need to turn it on. And Luka's the guy that, like, has set the tone every game since he's been a Maverick. We've seen what he can do from the start where he reads defenses, picks it apart, and sees what's going to work in a game. And then Kyrie's a guy who can come in, can close, can finish. He can, you know, use what he's seen but has been working in the first half and alter it a little bit once the adjustments come into play. And so when you have two guys like that who are the highest scoring duo in the NBA and they're doing it at different times where you can allow Luka to rest and not play the fourth quarter or to allow these guys to play with other teammates and get them involved so you have someone like Luka or Kyrie on the court at all times. It's so nice, and you can't take it for granted because not many teams at all have something like this where they have two players that attract and have that much gravity to the way that they play offensively.
in the second half. Kyrie, 18 points, 6 assists,
yeah,
plus 25. Yeah. Luka in the second half, 2 points on 3 shots,
yeah,
in 11 minutes.
Yeah.
He could just take it easy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point, right, Isaac? Like, on a night, well, I mean, we've seen the Mavs win games recently where Luka's maybe shooting it poorly or where Kyrie's struggling. Isn't that kind of the whole point of having two of these dudes? It's like, you don't need both of them to be firing at all times.
Yeah, I mean, the third quarter from Kyrie was special. You know, he had 12 points in the quarter. Just some of the stuff that, I mean, he was just kind of taking over the game. I mean, that was the biggest change of, biggest swing of the whole game. You know, you score 38 points in a quarter. You hold Sacramento to 23 in that quarter, and that's when you, you know, you take your biggest lead there. So, you know, with Luka going into the game, we all see the injury report that comes out before, and you're like, please, please play.
We need you, buddy.
I know. Like, we need these games. And, you know, from the opening tip, it felt like he was grimacing. We were joking on Wednesday on the live stream, or like, they kept on showing him grimacing on camera. It's like, all right, please don't show it. This is making me nervous. But, you know, I thought he played pretty good defense. I thought the team, I mean, I think that's one of the stories of the game is that, you know, the defense in this game. You know, the Kings are ninth in the league in points per game. And, you know, you look at, this was the ninth time this season they scored under 100 points all 9 games. It's like they score under 100 points, they lose. So, which I wouldn't say is probably an outlier for the Kings. I'd probably say there's a lot of teams out there that if they score under 100, they probably lose most of those games. But it's not a common thing for Sacramento. They did that. Obviously, there's some weird lineups and stuff in the fourth quarter that held them from getting to 100 points. But still, it's just a testament that the Kings didn't score 30 points in, you know, any of the quarters on Tuesday night. So can Dallas continue that tonight in Sacramento again? I mean, that's that third quarter, too, in which Kyrie scored 12, that held Sabonis to 2 points, Fox to 4 points in that quarter. I mean, that was just a massive quarter.
One more stat about Luka and Kyrie before we move on to some of the other guys that stepped up. So if you're watching on YouTube, you see the bottom of the screen. Since the All-Star break, Luka's averaged 19 points per game in the first half. Kyrie's averaged almost 15 points per game in the second half. And they're doing it efficiently, too. So in the first half, Luka shooting almost 51% from the floor, 42% from three, and 80% from the free throw line in the first half. And Kyrie in the second half, I don't know if y'all are going to believe these numbers, but I promise you I'm telling you the truth. 51.9% from the floor, 48.7% from three, and 94.7% from the free throw line in the second half since the All-Star break.
Clutch.
Yeah, dude. It's unbelievable. Okay.
Is this the – I mean, this is the only time in Luka's career here in Dallas that you can make the argument of him not getting the last shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure, right?
I was just thinking about that the other day. I'm like, it is pretty wild that you have the leading scorer in the NBA – we have an MVP candidate in Luka, and yet if they do the play up for somebody, or if they just gave the ball to somebody else on the team, somebody, Kyrie, and cleared it out, and even if he missed it, we'd be like, all right, I kind of get it.
Mm.
Like that, just that concept of like team construction is pretty wild to think about.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times in the Luka era where like Dorian got the last second shot against the Wizards, but that was as a consequence of Luka being double teamed.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know? Okay, so last week, we all sat here and bravely said, P.J. Washington, he's got to heat up. The Mavs were winning still last week. It was all good, but P.J. Washington was really struggling. Since then, though, he must have watched the show.
He did.
Okay? Because in his last 4 games, dude, he's been great. And against Sacramento, he came out of the gates hot, ended the night with 14 points, 5 of 11 from the floor, 4 of 6 from 3, 13 rebounds, which is most in a game as a Mav, plus 25 for the night. Isaac, I mean, what can you say? Dude, he made 4 threes.
No, I mean, he starts off, you know, first quarter hits, you know, all 3 of the threes he took. I was super excited for him in that moment. As I'm like, and you see it in the bench, too, because obviously he's been struggling. Everybody knows that from, you know, from 3 and every, you know, 3 that he hits, the bench is going nuts for him. Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge believer in him. I've been, you know, been saying this. He impacts basketball outside of his shot. I mean, you see that in a lot of his plus minus. You see, you know, his versatility on defense. He's going to play a ton for this team. They need him to play a ton for this team. So, yeah, I mean, this is one of the biggest keys when we were saying, hey, what's like one thing that we're watching for the rest of the season? It's like, man, can PJ get his 3-point percentage up? Because they got to leave somebody open. They can't just let Kyrie and Luka get you know, layups and all this stuff. So, yeah, it was super encouraging to see that.
I have a basketball player question for you, Austin. Okay, so for those who don't, who haven't tuned in, Austin, D1 basketball player, fueled by Snickers. Okay.
And Monster.
And Monster. And
Snickers or Monster, if you'd like to sponsor this podcast.
Yeah. Did you become a coffee person after college? Or
yeah,
were you...
I never drank coffee until post-college.
Okay. All right. Kind of same. Yeah. It was my senior year. Toward the end of my senior year, I was like, I'm just tired all the time. Yeah. Give me something. So there was a video before the Mavs embarked on this road trip. So I think it must have been last weekend. I want to say it was Brad Towns in the Dallas Morning News took this video of PJ shooting and said that they're doing a lot of PJ will catch the ball and it's this rhythm thing. It's like catch, one, two, shoot. Catch, one, two, shoot. So it's like timing. I don't know if one is like cock the ball, two is rise, but it's this. There's a rhythm to it. They're trying to develop this rhythm to his jumper. So it's not just about mechanics or confidence. There's a rhythm to it. Can you explain what that even means to somebody like me who's like catch, think about my arm, shoot the butt, and then it's like 3 seconds later and I'm airballing it? Why is rhythm important?
Yeah, I mean, like going back to like when you are first playing basketball, you start under the rim and it's fundamentals. Like you start with just like the follow through, and then you go into like pulling the ball up and then follow through, and then like taking a step, pulling the ball up, follow through. So like you add one step on, like that's how you learn how to shoot from a young age. And so getting in a rhythm, like he's probably like to start off shooting some shots right around the rim to get his form right. And then once he gets out to the 3-point line, he's warmed up. He's, you know, catch, shoot, make sure the ball is in the position you want, right on the right side of your body, come up to your shoulder, follow through, like, and then you go a little bit faster and faster and faster. And so you're just developing mentally like these habits that are just instilled in you. Like this is just like second, like, I mean, it's just like second nature to you. You don't know any different. Like it's just, you do it every time. And so you have to continue to get those reps of doing it, and you start slow and then you go a little bit faster and a little bit faster. And so then you get into that game rhythm of when, whether the ball's, you know, you're passing and it's a little down low or a little high, like it's just like ingrained in you to immediately move it to your shooting motion into the pocket and follow through. And so you doing that in practice every single day, having Kyrie and Luka pass it to you, and you get it, and then you go right into your shooting motion. Then when you get into a game, it doesn't matter where the defense is running at you from, where you are on the court. You just, it's just like second nature to you. Your body just goes into that shooting motion immediately. So it's just all about reps. I mean, all about reps. Like as many as you can get. You think about how many times these guys have shot throughout their basketball playing days, like so many. But to get in that, the reps aren't good if you're not shooting it in your right motion. That like that's what you want in a game. So that's the biggest thing, is like getting those reps and then carrying that over into the games.
So I guess the trick is to like do it so much where you don't have to think about, yes, the thing that you are thinking about.
Yeah. Like you, yeah. Cause once you're in a game, you don't have time to think about, is the ball like right here? Is it right here? Like you can't think about that. You're just thinking about getting the shot off. So like, that's why practice is so important, because you have time to slow it down a little bit, know where you want it, and then practice it so much that it just comes to you naturally once you get into the games.
That feels a lot more important playing with Luka, because obviously he's going to serve you up the cleanest looks of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes those passes are going to come in a situation where maybe you don't expect it.
Right.
Or maybe you're like, he's definitely going up for a layup. Oh my God, now I have the ball. What do I do? So it's like got to be, does it, in those situations, does it have to be even more subconscious?
Yeah, but I think it does. But I think once you're in a game and you've played with Luka long enough, like you don't expect it, but then you still do at the same time, because you just never know what kind of pass or when he is going to pass it to you. And so you're not really thinking in the moment like, oh my gosh, he threw it behind his back or did this or this to get me the ball. Like you're just like, okay, the ball came to me, like I shoot it, like I see I have an open shot, I shoot it. And you get to that motion, like you don't think about how it got here, where the defense is, or what the score is, or if it's late in the game, or whatever it is. You're just thinking about literally shooting it, and you're not even really thinking about it. It just comes to you so naturally.
The whole idea of, there's a David Foster Wallace article about athletes. It's about a tennis player, and I can't remember which one, maybe Steffi Graf, I'm not sure, but it's kind of about like the mental aspect of playing a sport where it's like you have to be super focused, but you can't be thinking about anything.
Right.
Like you're locked in, but you're like locked in on nothing. I don't know. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Because you can't think. One guy that doesn't think whenever he's got it going on, he just stays unconscious all the time, and he's always ready for these Luka passes. Tim Hardaway Jr., and man, he has been going through it for a while now, but all of a sudden, you know, we had a really good game in Sacramento on Tuesday, 22 points, shot. Let me see here. Stalling for time. 8 of 14 from the floor. 4 of 6 from 3. Made a couple free throws. Also had 6 assists, and he's been passing it pretty well lately, too. Over his last 6 games now, and obviously this one Kings game is a big reason why, but he's averaging 10.7 points, 43.4% from the floor, 41.9% from 3. So, Isaac, I'm trying to imagine a world where both P.J. Washington Jr. and Tim Hardaway Jr. are like 38, 39, 40% three-point shooters and what that could do for this thing.
That's a world with a lot of fun things happening for Mavs fans if they're both hitting that. You know, yeah, for Tim, he's obviously been struggling too. But, you know, over these past, you know, 6 games, you see on at the bottom of the screen, or 42% from 3. That's huge for him because that's what he's asked to do the most. I think some of the decision making, whenever you're struggling from three, it forces him to maybe make some more decisions that is probably outside of his wheelhouse. And that's when you see some of the forced shots or some of the long twos when he's getting double teamed or something like that. But he's going to get open shots, and they need a third scorer. They need somebody else out there that can score with a Kyrie, with a Luka, when one of the, you know, the other one is sitting on the bench. So, yeah, happy for him. They need him. I mean, it feels like it was a whole different season in which we were talking about Tim being a Sixth Man of the Year candidate earlier this season. So a lot has happened since then. So if they can get that Tim back from the beginning of the season, I mean, that's what you need come playoff time.
Yeah, Jason Kidda said we need Tim Hardaway. But we were just talking about PJ, and he's finding his shot. Tim is now finding his shot. Like, shooting is contagious. So a lot of times you see one guy in a shooting slump, it kind of carries over to another. But when you see one guy knock down multiple shots in a game, like, it's just contagious like that. You start knocking down shots too. So in an ideal world, yes, they're both shooting great. And that's likely the case with really good teams, is like the whole team is shooting good because it's just so contagious. And the Mavs shot 56% from three in that game. And that you saw that exactly. PJ makes some shots. Tim makes some shots. Luka, Kyrie, everyone is doing their part because it's just contagious like that.
And Dante Exum,
right,
still around 50%, if not even a little over 50% now, made 4 threes in that Spurs game. Need Maxi Kleber to heat up a little bit, and we'll be talking about some five-out stuff here in a little bit. But first, this one win. Now, a lot of this can be undone if Mavs lose tonight. But
I thought you were about to do an ad break. I was like, what?
No, but first, a word from our friends. Yeah,
Snickers, a monster.
Yeah. Are you hungry? sorry, just completely took me off.
I love throwing
me off the rails here. Yeah, I was nailing that segue.
You were in the zone. See, a shooter can't get distracted like
that.
Now
I'm thinking. Yeah,
you can't think
about it. That's why DA is always hollering at these guys as they're shooting.
I'm just going to throw random stuff at you.
Onyx. If you actually want to see stuff thrown at me, we're doing a thing sponsored by Acme Brick where they're going to be throwing bricks at me while I do a game preview.
Actual bricks.
Unclear.
How can I sign up to be a thrower?
Hit up MavStudio41 on Instagram. That's how you can enter to win. That
it reminds me of Home Alone 2. Suck brick, kid.
Sorry. So if the season ended right now, we'd all be pretty happy. As we take a look at the standings out west, that win against the Kings moved the Mavs up into sixth place. Now, since then, boy, the Pelicans have won, I think, 2 games. The Clippers won. The Suns scored a win at Denver. The Lakers beat the Bucks without LeBron. Like, none of these other – the Warriors are winning. The Rockets haven't lost in, like, 6 months. So nobody else is cooperating here for our protagonists of reality in Dallas. To where if the Mavs lose tonight, there's a chance they could fall all the way back down to 8th place. But if the season ended today, we're super happy. That said, there's always some big bad villains on the horizon. Austin, who's a team that you just would rather not play right now?
In the playoffs.
7-game series. The Mavs are totally not going to be in the play-in. Am I right, guys?
Right.
7-game series.
Yeah. I mean, I think your most likely option is playing a 1, 2, or 3, and that's Denver, Minnesota, or Oklahoma City. And I think out of those top 3 teams right now, Denver is the team that you don't want to face.
The Mavs just beat them, though, so how come?
They just beat them with the buzzer beater, but the other 2 times they've lost. They're just a difficult matchup. I think they have one of the best starting 5s in the league right now. I think their bench depth isn't great, but when you have someone like Nikola, he is just so dominant inside. He can muscle up anyone, and we do have help now with Gafford. on the team where he wasn't there in the first two matchups, but it's still like there's only so much you can do with him. And so I think that they're the defending champs for a reason. They know how to win. They know what it takes to get there. And I think that would just be a difficult matchup. I don't think it's impossible at all, but I think that would be the most difficult matchup.
Feels like the Mavs are better equipped for that matchup now than they would have been before the deadline.
Yep.
But still, the Joker, that guy's really good.
Yeah.
Jamal Murray's really good too. Isaac, how about you? Where are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I think Denver has to be the answer. I'll talk about a different team, but I just think Denver's the best team in the league. Like, if Denver played Boston or Milwaukee or whoever in the finals right now, I'd still pick Denver with that.
Right now, the Mavs are on the opposite side of the bracket or whatever.
Yeah.
They wouldn't cross paths with the Nuggets until the conference finals.
Yeah, I just want no part of Jokic in a series and, you know, the chemistry those guys have and all that stuff winning the title. For me, for a different answer, and I know this probably won't be popular because they're not playing very well right now, but I don't want the Clippers. I'm tired of them. I'm sick of them. I'm sick of them in a playoff series. I'm sick of the memories of it. And even from a selfish standpoint, I don't want to do series previews, series breakdowns, series matchups and strategies with Kawhi and Paul George and Ty Lue and all the stuff again and relive. And we're going to see all the like highlights again and all the story. I don't want any part of Kawhi in a playoff series that if you go across the league and say, hey, who are three players that you would not, and let's say everyone's fully healthy, three players you don't want to see in a playoff series. Besides Jokic, I think Kawhi is right there number two for me.
Who would be the other one?
I don't know.
Luka? Because like you got to think like, I mean, I know this is kind of like the talking point on a lot of national shows right now is like teams at the top are looking around like, oh my God, the Mavs are really good right now. Like I don't want to see Kyrie makes a lefty floater to win a game. Like I don't want any part of that dude.
Yeah.
You know, and the Mavs have two of those guys.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we're saying who do we not want to play in a series. It's not saying that, hey, I think we'll lose in this series because to your point, we look so much different now and having Kyrie and all this stuff. Like there's not a series in which Dallas would go into, and this is not state media talk, there's not a series that they would go into that would be like, yeah, they don't have a shot. I think they'd have a shot against anybody.
That said, they'd probably be considered the underdog in any matchup. I guess there's a really outside chance they could climb as high as fourth, but probably not. So they're probably going to be playing game one on the road.
You think that they would be considered an underdog if it's a 6-3 against Minnesota without Cat?
Ooh. His timetable is still unclear, right? It's very, it's kind of like Luka against the Jazz. Like, he might come back.
Listen, they're still really good. Yeah. They have, you know, Ant and McDaniels and Gobert and like the supporting cast. So like they've won three in a row. So I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying like, I wonder how much of an underdog, if like Dallas continues to stay really hot, finish the season with, you know, a nice record. They finish sixth, Minnesota's third. How much underdog Dallas would be in that?
I think that they can give any team a series. Mm-hmm. I think they can beat any team, but we've seen it. I mean, if their offense is just a little off or if their defense is just not executing, then it's really tough for them to string together a lot of wins. So, I mean, the Mavs have been over the last, 23 games, they're 17-6. That includes a 7-game win streak and winning 9 out of 10 and losing 5 out of 6. So, like, they've got to stay locked in. But when they do, when they're locked in, they can beat anybody.
Do you think Houston catches Golden State?
Maybe. So I mean, the Mavs are going to have as big a part as any team in determining how the 10-11 finishes because they play both teams twice.
Yeah, that's the crazy part about that is, you know, they're a game back. Houston's won 10 games in a row. You look at the hottest teams in the West right now as far as, you know, winning streaks. You know, it's Houston with 10 in a row, Dallas and L.A. with 5 in a row. But it is pretty wild that we have – you know, out of our few remaining games, 4 of those games are 2 Golden State, 2 Houston. So Dallas could be helping decide who gets into play in there.
And Houston is red hot. Austin, you have still not done your job of derailing the Rockets a season.
I know.
But the Cougars eliminated?
No, they play tonight.
Oh, they play tonight?
Yeah, like at the same time as the Mavs. So
they play Duke.
Multitasking.
Oh, they play Duke?
Yeah.
And okay. Dallas.
Oh, and that's right, at the arena. We got a Sweet 16 and Elite 8 games.
Yep.
So that's tonight and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other game?
What is the other game?
Oh, let me see. Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
I know.
I'm
oh,
sure
Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Dalton Connect.
Yeah. Is it?
And Creighton.
Yep.
Creighton.
I should know.
Oh, no. They're playing in Detroit. Great pregame media dining there. It's Marquette and NC State. Dennis Smith Jr.'s alma mater and Jay the Beast Crowder's alma mater. How about that?
Okay.
Wessie Wes, all the guys from Marquette. The Mavs have had a lot of Marquette. Are they the Golden Eagles?
Yeah.
On their team over the years. Mavs also have a lot of Duke players. So hopefully they won't be distracted during the game. Kyrie won't be like checking out replays or whatever.
They'll be checking in on the Tribe at halftime.
Yeah. Now, last week also you roasted me for not having a bracket.
Yeah.
I think yours is just on fire right now. So we'll call it even.
On fire it could be on fire in a good way.
Is
like,
it in
so
a good
hot?
Way? Oh, that's right.
On
yeah.
Fire.
Yeah, that's
North
right.
North Carolina lost last night. So
yeah, it's tough, man.
My bracket's
I
gone.
Lost. Yeah, every team that won last night, I did not have winning. So I did not gain any points with yesterday's games.
Man, March takes no prisoners, that's for sure. Okay, so this has been something that has been kind of floating around in the old dome for a few weeks now since the trade deadline, because the Mavs, first off, you know, again, it's very important to say every time we're talking about the Mavs having these two centers, Derek Lively second and Daniel Gafford, for the first half of the season before the deadline, Lively was injured for like half of that time. So he's been healthy. And then at the trade deadline, you get Daniel Gafford. So you got these two big, strong finishers, rim runners, rim protectors, dunkers, rebounders, shot blockers, all that stuff. And yet sometimes neither of them are on the floor. Sometimes they're going maxi at the five and playing five out basketball with a very switch heavy defensive scheme. Okay. And opinion on this is very divided, right? Because sometimes the Mavs have gone to that lineup in a night where maybe Gafford is dominating or maybe Lively's having a fantastic game, and yet neither of them is finishing the game. Maxi's closing out at five. And I got some stats and stuff. I got some ideas, but I want to just like take a super step back, and I want one of you to explain five-out basketball to me like I'm 5 years old. Why? What is five-out basketball, and why do the Mavs play it? Why is it important to play it at all? Who plays it? Is it even worth going, building a roster that can play that style of basketball? Who wants to step up and teach?
I'll go.
You got it.
Okay.
You were a hooper.
I mean, so just like the basic like five out basketball from a young age, it's all five guys are on the perimeter. Like no one is in the paint. So you have those opportunities for passing lanes, cutting lanes, driving lanes. There's a lot of space so you can drive, and it forces the help defense either come all the way over. And if they do, then you kick it out to the corner. And if you don't, you have a shot around the rim. So it's a lot of moving. It's motion. No one's really standing still. You're passing it. You're cutting it. Like, everyone is moving. And so it just gives you those wide open spaces and driving lanes for everyone. So a lot of teams, when you have three-point shooters, you put them in the two corners and you drive. And it either forces the defense to kind of pick your poison. Are you going to sag off your lethal three-point shooter in the corner to help stop the drive, and then if you do, you kick it out, and if they don't sag off and help, then whoever's driving can get to the paint and have an open shot. So when you have guys like Kyrie and Luka who are so good one-on-one, when you're playing five out like that, it gives them room to just go to work and figure out what's working with the defense, take them one-on-one, break them down. And you can also have the ball screens in there, the pick and pops, the pick and rolls, but even after you do roll, then you usually go right back out to the corner and everyone kind of just rotates over. So for the most part, it's free flowing, it's moving, and there's just a lot of openness and around the paint for people to cut and drive with just their feet moving or with the ball.
Now, Luka still does get in the paint if it's, let's say, Daniel Gafford sets a screen for him. Gafford, great screener, and he's rolling to the rim, and he got the lob game going. But in this case, if Maxie's the five, he's probably not screening for Luka. He's spot up in the corner on the wing or whatever, thereby pulling that rim protector away from the basket. Whereas if it's Gafford or Lively screening for Luka, there's just going to be more stuff going on around the rim.
Yeah.
So I guess it, in this case, for the Mavs specifically, they go five out to make Luka's job scoring the ball easier. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, Luka is so good with Gafford, with the pick and roll. Like, we've seen the way that he has the vision to pick apart defenses, to break them down, and to dish it off to someone. So he can he's Luka. He can play either way. Any we've seen him have success in any type of offense and with any defense that's thrown his way. So it truly for Luka, I mean, yeah, he probably it's easier for him when he has wide open lane and he doesn't really have to worry about the help defense. But he can play. He's versatile.
He is leading the league in scoring.
He can figure out ways to score no matter what. So
yeah. Isaac, you look around the NBA, some of the top teams in the league by record, Celtics, Thunder, Nuggets. I mean, Jokic posts up quite a bit, but they can all spread the floor. So why is this something that are good teams playing this because they're good, or are they good because they're playing this way?
Yeah, it's all about spacing when you're in five out. To what y'all have been talking about is be able to pull a defender. this was talked about a lot with Utah with Rudy there for those few years there of how do we pull Rudy, the best paint defender in the league? How do we pull him away from the basket? So you put a guy out there like Maxey who hits all these threes against Utah, and you look at a Clippers team who goes small and goes really small, five out. Creates a space, dares Rudy, all right, you're going to have to step out and guard a Robert Covington or a Marcus Morris or something like that. Pull him away from the paint. Allow your, a lot of times you see this with I don't really love the heliocentric offense teams, but, the James Hardens, the Luka, the Lukas, to where you're like, all right, the ultimate ISO guys, just here you go. We're going to create the space, break them down. Once you can get past your defender, Luka can get past anybody. All right, they're either going to give you a layup, you're going to get fouled, or somebody's going to help off. And somebody, the magician that Luka is, he's going to find whoever helps off, he's going to find the open man. So, so that's why Dallas will do it. They'll switch it up. You take Gafford Lively off the floor, put Maxey in there. As long as Maxey's hitting the three, they're going to step out there to where if, you could run the same offense out there theoretically, put Gafford out on the floor, put Gafford in the, in the corner. And
I mean, the way that they would respond to Gafford in the corner is much different though.
No, that's what I was going to say. And whoever's guarding Gafford's just going to basically be in the paint. Foot in the paint. So, that's where you put Maxey out there. Or, you could get even, riskier and put PJ at the five. And
I don't think they've done that yet, have they?
No, I don't think we've seen that yet. So if you put the Clippers in the playoffs, you might see that.
Yeah.
So anyway, you put Maxey out there, it theoretically, it spaces out the floor for a guy like Luka or Kyrie to really, cook at that point. So compared to like a four out, to where you have a Gafford or Lively out there, so you have the non-shooter out there. And, in that case, you got to figure out what you're going to do with the non-shooter. You're going to put the non-shooter in the short corner. You're going to have him kind of flare up to the free throw line, kind of pass it to him, run some actions off ball, or have that guy at the free throw line make a decision like corner, a little shot. Or like Dallas likes to do the most, that's when you have your pick and roll option. And we know, Dallas is elite in pick and roll with Gafford or Lively, especially with Luka running that. And then you just have a different type of, presence. You have a above the rim presence at that point. And you can throw the lob. You can take the shot yourself. Both of those numbers, both the points per possession for both the ball handler and the pick and roll guy are right at one or a little over one, which is great. Or you can hit the open guy. It just gives you and obviously when you have the non-shooter in there for Dallas, it's Lively or Gafford, gives you a little bit more rebounding, gives you, on defense, a paint presence compared to, even though Maxey can defend the paint, gives you more with Gafford or Lively. It's just a different look. And this is what this is all about. I don't think this discussion is, I don't want to say frustrating, but it's kind of pointless at some point. People get so wrapped up into it. It's a good problem to have. You got to have the versatility to be able to go five out and also be able to have a bigger body on the floor to run pick and rolls and have a paint presence and all of that. It's all about now. I think the thing that everybody's going to dissect is when do you throw out which one?
Yeah. And if it doesn't work.
Yeah. If it doesn't work, then it's coach's fault. It's player's fault. When it does work, it's like, oh, cool. I'm glad we have that option. It's all about having options. We could be married to just one option, and it's like, all right, no matter who we play, we just got to play this option.
I mean, you got to have a fastball and an off-speed pitch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think, so since the trade deadline, the Mavs didn't – I mean, they lost the game to Philly. It was kind of like a sort of fake comeback at the end. A lot of their losses have been sort of lopsided. I guess the one loss being Cleveland, that was not – And that game was weird for a lot of reasons, you know, namely Max Strus. I'd like to just block that one from my memory.
Yeah.
So I don't think that the lineup decision has necessarily directly influenced the result of the game or whatever. But sometimes it is going to work and sometimes not going to work. But yeah, it is kind of a in some ways, it's also a response to what the defense is doing too, because what teams will do, some teams will do, not every team, but they don't want their big man to have to switch off and guard Luka, right? They don't want their big man, because Luka's just going to toy with those guys, drag them out to the deep end, and then just embarrass them on national TV. So a lot of times, teams will put their big man on like Derek Jones, or on PJ Washington, or on Dante Exum even, to where if Daniel Gafford or Lively is setting the screen for Luka, they can just switch it because they're putting a wing or a guard on the big man, and there's no advantage to be gained from that pick and roll. So then, okay, you don't want to put the big man in the pick and roll, so let's put the big man in the dunker spot and then bring PJ Washington or bring Derek Jones Jr. up to screen for Luka to get that big man involved in the action. But then if Luka's able to turn the corner on the big man, he's running right into his own teammate and the guy that's guarding his own teammate. So sometimes the Mavs go five out as a response to how the defense is guarding them, right?
Yeah.
So it's not always we're going to do this just to mess with you. Sometimes it's we're going to do this because we have to. But then the other – let's do the other – end of the floor now. So with Maxey on the floor and no center on the floor, so no Dwight, no Rashawn Holmes, no Gafford, no Lively, I believe those are the only centers that have suited up for the Mavs this season. So whenever it's only Maxey on the floor, opponents are shooting 56.6% from the floor, which is not good if you're the Mavs, but 32.9% from three, which is really good if you're the Mavs. It just means they're shooting twos really well. And I would contend when Maxey is the five, they're usually switching everything, which means oftentimes Maxey is going to end up guarding perimeter guys. So if he gets beat, then Austin, what you were talking about before, there's not going to be any help behind him because your big man is out here. That's all your little guys down low. And then also, if your big man is farthest away from the basket, you might struggle to rebound a little bit.
Yeah.
So there is kind of a trade-off where if Gafford or Lively's on the floor, hey, if you get beat, don't worry. I got you. I'm going to block that shot. But it might mean that you can't switch. You're going to have to do more things to protect Luka and Kyrie. So it really feels like five out kind of like really simplifies and streamlines things at both ends of the floor. But there's like a give and take.
Yeah, there's some disadvantages with both. Offensively with the five out, when you're on offense and you have five guys out and you're shooting it and you're not making the shot, you really don't have anyone in the paint right there to go rebound. So you're going in and crashing the boards, but you don't have someone where you would have Gafford or Lively already down there right around the rim to pull in those rebounds that come off the rim. So that's kind of the disadvantage when you're playing five out. You don't get as many second chance opportunities for putbacks. And then defensively, like you said, you still don't have Gafford or Lively out there that has been so dominant pulling down boards and not allowing our opponents to get second chance looks. So there are some disadvantages to both, but there are also are advantages. So yeah, it's just kind of doing what's working for you, throwing different things at teams so they can't like figure you out and then just figure out how to stop it, because then you bring in Maxey, you throw something else at them, you just keep doing different things. And then yeah, you kind of just see what's working and who's hot.
You want me to go?
Well, I was gonna ask a little bit of follow-up to you.
Go.
To you.
Oh, oh yeah.
Say, Isaac, is this so generally speaking, they've gone to five out whenever everyone's healthy. Right.
Yeah.
So like if whenever Lively was out, they were playing a lot of five out because they had to. Whenever everybody's healthy, the Mavs have generally saved the five out stuff for like the last 5 minutes of games. Maxey's closing games. Again, regardless of whether or not Gafford's having a good game or Lively's having a good game, it's usually been Maxey on the floor. Do you think that's something that they should keep doing no matter what? Do you think it's something that they should do depending on game flow? Or do you think it's something that they should not do?
I don't think I'm in the camp of option three there. I think it's more of either I think I land in the camp of you either keep doing it or it's matchup dependent, kind of based. We'll see how, you know, the game's flowing or what the other lineup is that you're going against. But I think it's definitely something that we will see more, especially come playoff time, because it's just when you have a guy like Luka or Kyrie that can break down any defender, you're almost locked into an open shot when you're playing five
pretty
out
much.
And you know, this is what, as a Mavs fan, I think this is what, like, what's the next evolution of this team and this roster, like moving forward. The sweet spot and what should get a lot of Mavs fans really excited is when you have a five that can do both. that can be the rim roller, paint presence, and all that. And I think what gets you, but also hit the outside shot, what gets you excited, it gets me excited about moving forward, is can Derek Lively turn into an outside shooter that we've seen, you know, we've seen the clips pre-draft and all that stuff. Like, that's the next evolution of this team, because you look across the league and, like, who's the unicorn freak fives? You know, you look at, like, a Wemby who can do both, and you're like, I mean, what, like, there is, you're not having the five out conversation or all that. Like, he is all of that. Yeah. So can you imagine when Derek Lively is hitting the outside shot and everyone respects it, and you're like, dang, he's legit a stretch five, but he's also protecting the paint and rim rolling and all that.
Getting putbacks and
And so then it's like, I mean, that's like the supernova, like, I don't even know what a Pokemon reference would be for, like, the
like mega evolution.
Yeah, there you go. The last phase, the Charizard. Is that the last phase?
I'll accept that answer.
We have Charmander.
I'm proud of you, man.
We have
Charmeleon. Yeah.
Charizard.
Yep.
Pikachu.
Well, that's a different.
That is a Pokemon. I'll also take that. You know, well done. Well done.
Thank you.
I'm like tearing up. This is actually really exciting.
But that's the like final phase of, like, I mean, I really wouldn't know how a team would, like, defend it at that point if Derek Lively turns into that.
In that case, you're introducing more people into the lineup that are kind of, we got to pick our poison. Right now, it's Luka and Kyrie, which, hey, that's really, but you want to know what's even cooler? Having three or four guys. You got to pick, you know.
Yeah.
Then we're like, oh, boy, you know, we're going to the moon, baby. All right, final score predictions tonight. This is going to be posted a few hours before tip-off, so people are going to watch this thing to warm up and get ready for Mavs basketball. Give me a final score prediction, and next week you're going to have to defend your take.
Oh, gosh. Okay, what was the score of their game 2 days ago?
132-96.
Okay.
Going for a repeat?
For reference, they shot 56% from three the other night.
22 threes, yeah. I think it will be... closer.
Okay.
Both teams have had a couple days off to make some adjustments, to rest, to get some, you know, practice in. So I think it's going to be a closer game.
Like 29?
Yeah.
28?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just, yeah. I'm going to go with 114 to 101.
Who wins?
Mavs.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah.
Let's go.
Okay. All right. Book it. Isaac?
122 to 118. Mavs.
Okay, also, book that one, too. We got, all right, we're 2-0. 184 to 61.
I love it. I wouldn't book that one, but I love it.
We're making history. They're not going to shoot 56% from three, Isaac. They're going to shoot 96% from three.
Take Kyrie's free throw percentage, and that is the entire team's percentage.
They're going to go 24 for 25 from three in the first half, and then do that same thing in the second half. And they're going to, like, call the game off after the third quarter, because they're like, this is just out of hand.
We do got to see a few things about this matchup coming after Tuesday is, yes, Dallas, will they shoot 56% from three? You hope so. If not, how do they win the game? We've seen them win plenty of games in which they don't shoot that from three.
Kings also miss a lot of floaters too. A lot of stuff around.
Sabonis only had 12 points in that game. He's so crafty of a dude. He's hard to defend because he's so crafty and all of that. So I would assume he's probably going to have more than 12 points in this game. How can they, how do they stop him? And, you know, does Tim's streak continue going on, to which he's playing, you know, good basketball, 22 points off the bench the other night. So
needs 3 points to pass Jason Kidd for 15th place on the Mavs all-time scoring list.
Whoa.
How about that? Will he get there tonight?
Yeah,
I think so.
Of course.
Okay.
I did like how Tim talked about after the game, how Kyrie has been, like, really supportive of him in the past, you know, during this stretch of when he hasn't been shooting great. He was just saying that, like, Kyrie's been a guy that's been in my corner saying, when I pass it to you, like, I want you to shoot. And having that trust within your teammates, like, and knowing that, like, they have confidence in you, like, plays a difference. And especially down the stretch in these final games of the season, like, just knowing that, like, your teammates trust you that much, like, makes a difference. And, like, the way your rhythm, the way you shoot the ball, like, just knowing, like, you're not questioning it, you're not second guessing it. So, it's great that you have a leader like Luka, obviously, but, like, Kyrie, who's vocally, like, telling Tim, PJ, everyone, like, you know, we believe in you. We trust you. You guys are going to knock down your shots.
That's some good leadership.
Yeah.
That's chemistry. That's trust. That's accountability, positivity, all the stuff that this team needs. All the stuff this team needs. Okay, it's Mavs Kings tonight. Mavs Rockets on Sunday. Mavs Warriors on Tuesday. Folks, these are some huge, huge, huge games. So lock it in. Get ready for some dang basketball. All right? Any parting shots? Any final words before I land this plane very quickly and efficiently?
Land it.
Land.
All right. The Cat and Chopper in the back. For Austin and Isaac, up on the stage with me, I'm Bobby. You're awesome. This has been The Corner 3. And we will be back with you next Friday. Wait, one more thing. Just kidding. See ya.